Welcome back, and we have once again Tony Sobrato back in our virtual studio. For those who missed it,
Tony is a research analyst and social scientist currently based in London, author of the soon-to-be-published book, Who Rules the World? An Analysis of Conspiracy Theory. He also contributes to the Huffington Post. Hello, Tony. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Don. It's a pleasure to be here. Hello, everyone listening in Vancouver and Canada.
You've written about conservatism. Canada seems to be about a 10-year delay from the U.S. Whatever happens in the U.S. happens here in Canada. So in this sense, it's kind of important to us. Presently in the United States, as witnessed by the GOP nomination campaign, there seems to be an occurring and sort of mutation of classic conservatism into something that is, quote, sort of new, twisted form of it. From my studies in political science, the most basic thing about conservatism is sort of a resistance to change. That is, what we have is good, and change, or at least rapid change, is dangerous and possibly catastrophic. The current crop of GOP candidates claim to be conservative, but they advocate rapid and major changes to the social political landscape of the country. They do this, of course, by making appeals to the distant past, be it the Founding Fathers or the Bible, but these are not, at least in most cases, even seem to be valid appeals. By valid, I mean, for example, they claim the U.S. was a Christian nation where the church had a major role in politics, and they view this was supported and intended by the Founding Fathers. That is not historically accurate. One could say the U.S. was a Christian nation in the sense the majority of its population were Christian, but the separation of church and state was fundamental to the success of the early U.S. I think without that firewall, the early American experiment probably would have failed due to sectarian fighting. So this is just using the U.S. as an example. In England, they have their own sort of struggles with conservative old and new. However, it seems to me, quite a different type of conservatism in England and Europe than in the U.S. Your view of conservatism is slightly different than mine, I think. How do you see conservatism as being manifest in the current political circus, both in the U.S. and the U.K.?
Yes, a very interesting point. I think the conservative kind of dichotomy right now and the approach being kind of manifest in the United States is its very own kind of entrenched reactionary conservatism. And it's different from what we're seeing in England and Europe. Now, there's obviously different interpretations and different standpoints behind conservatism. But if we'll take, say, two of its central features in the paradigm, which is, A, it's kind of the conservation of values. So, obviously, the general philosophical mantra here is, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. So, we don't want massive revolutions. If everything's functioning just fine, we'll keep it as it is, and we have a conservation of values. At the same time, conservatism, the actual political philosophy, say, espoused by this founder, Edmund Burke, is that it has to be flexible and pragmatic in the face of changing social phenomena. And that is kind of outlined conservatism in this country, in the UK, since the Second World War. So the Conservative Party right now, under David Cameron, is obviously kind of adaptable, and it's making itself malleable in terms of global and social needs. So we obviously see that we have no issues with homosexuality in this country. I mean, socially there still could be issues, but in terms of the actual political and state line, is that there is no problem with homosexuality. We have open homosexuals in the government Conservative Party, and we also have the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party, and basically all three parties in Britain are for green policies, and no one in this country is espousing global warming as a conspiracy theory. So in the UK and in Europe, at least, we have traditional conservatism in the sense that it isn't looking for radical piecemeal kind of change and a revolution. It's kind of advocating more a keeping the establishment going as far as it needs to go, but when it needs to change, it's changing, and we're seeing this with policies. What you've got in America is currently under the Republican Party, and obviously certain branches of it, say the Tea Party, which is extremely dogmatic and conservative, is you're seeing a kind of remoulding and a readaptation of what it is to be a conservative traditionalist, because first of all, they're not actually being adaptable to social change. They're just basically still espousing dogmatic canon. And we see this in terms of its attitude towards not just a single-sex marriage, but also the actual legitimacy of being a homosexual, which is kind of a strange contradiction in terms of when you compare it to the British or the European conservative movement, which is still conservative in certain values, but is still adapting to social needs. The Republican Party in America isn't doing this. They're still basically advocating just the pure conservation of social values and ideals, where these kind of relationships between people are basically just wrong, inherently wrong. And their recourse to this is based largely on Christian values. So they're being unconservative in a traditional point in two ways. First of all, by not adapting to social change, which certain strands of conservatism say is necessary, and B, justifying this reactionary attitude and its decline and refusal to change by adhering to usually biblical testaments in terms of homosexuality is wrong. And we also see this kind of reactionary issue kind of spilled over into other policies, where we have a certain aspects in the Republican Party that don't want to sign up to green treaties, and they still want to advocate kind of proliferation and the advocation of big business, and basically the environment takes a second stand, if you want to say it's on the back burner. It's not a real issue. And this is a very interesting phenomenon, and like you were saying, it's quite odd at the moment in America in certain respects. And I personally think that this kind of reactionary conservatism has kind of come about only the post-Bush era. And that's for the main reason that when Bush, after 9/11, the invasion of Iraq, he was basically, his party and the people behind him basically in kind of a bad state in terms of everyone had lost faith in them and he was unelectable. So what he did, which is actually kind of a clever PR strategy move behind the consultants behind the Republican Party at the time, which was, well, if they're going to get votes and they need to get another election, we're really going to have to play to the grassroots. We're going to have to play to the core supporters. And this is where, I mean, at the same time, it's not like George Bush is kind of being deceiving, because he is kind of, there is no lie behind it. He's not making a pretense. He is quite a Christian man, and he basically believes that same-sex marriage is wrong. So they kind of play to this, to the strength of the party, and basically appeal to the core support, which is obviously policies on abortion and same-sex marriage. And this still lingers today. And the reason it lingers today is because one aspect of what the Bush and the Republican Party did in terms of playing to the grassroots again, which is really ultra-conservative. And now, where in terms of political strategy, they have to play an opposite game to the Obama and Democratic Party. And if it wasn't for Obama's policies and the party being so in a polar opposite, then they wouldn't have to play this game with a mirror image. It's only because Obama has certain policies, for example, welfare expenditure and free medical coverage, that is so radical for the American society, because it's the more or less the first time in history that this bill has been passed, that it's so radical in one respect that the Republicans on the other side of the spectrum have to be as equally radical as him. So there's basically distancing yourself as much as you can from the current administration, going in the opposite direction, because at the end of the day, they want to present themselves as an alternative to the government. So where we've got Obama being perceived as this radical liberal slash socialist and these kind of progressive democratic views, on the other side of the spectrum, we're getting this really reactionary, conservative and dogmatic espousal, which is still treating certain issues as if they're inherently wrong based on the Bible. And this kind of dogmatic conservatism has only come about since the post-Bush era, because if you think about the old conservative paradigm, say the Republicans in the 80s under Reagan, this was more based on the intellectual merits of Reaganomics and free market economics, mainly the Milton Friedman School, Chicago free market economics. So that was more of an intellectual game in terms of justifying the market and how it's useful for society in terms of growth, wealth and expenditure. And today, we've kind of lost that intellectual academic game to the Republican Party, and they're just basically playing the old conservative card in terms of using the Bible for justification and being as reactionary as they can. And that's one area that really sets it apart from the conservatism in Europe and Britain at the moment.
One of the things I find interesting, actually, on this particular area is, in an odd sort of way, Obama is more to the left than most of the Republicans, but I mean, he's far from what we would consider to be, you know, a socialist. But in the sort of Tea Party's GOP mantra, I mean, they're equating him to Stalin and Hitler. I mean, they're sort of creating this big, huge, radical person who doesn't really exist, and then they have to be the exact opposite to resist them. I mean, there's an interesting feedback loop there.
Well, yeah, I completely agree with that itself. I mean, by European standards, Obama is not a socialist or a Stalinist. I mean, when the bill got passed for Medicare coverage for the most, basically, for people that can't afford medical insurance in the States, they were basically, one of the first program that they went to basically discredit with the British NHS service, which, okay, isn't the most efficient kind of service in the world, but at least it guarantees you free medical care at the point of delivery. And when this was going on in America, it kind of just got transposed to the idea of he's a Stalin, he's a socialist, and it's the doctors of death, because it's kind of interesting what they did with this paradigm, as where in this country we see that basically medical coverage for everyone is free, because obviously if you had to pay for it, then there's obviously going to be different inequalities and stratas. What people in the Republican Party were doing in quite an astute way was kind of twisting the argument, was saying, well, if the government can choose what policies and what medicine and what programs are being inducted in hospitals, then they also choose who gets to live or die, which isn't necessarily the case. But the logic behind that argument was quite interesting, in terms of that was kind of a well-made-up kind of schema to employ. But that whole thing with Obama is quite interesting. As you're saying, and as I agree with you, is that they've basically invented this straw man, making him a Stalinist, and look how radical he is. And at the same time, they're like, oh, we don't want that end of the spectrum, because basically he's going to curtail all your social freedoms, he's going to basically take all your tax, and he's going to use it to spend it on what he wants, and he's even going to dictate to you what you're going to do for your health policy. We don't want that. We're going to be the opposite of that in the spectrum. We're going to be as conservative and reactionary as we can. And, I mean, you see it all the time with certain aspects of the Republican Party. So, first of all, the party has no open atheists, is it? Which I find quite interesting. And then last time around in the election, when it was Obama versus McCain, during those Republican candidacy debates, I believe it was 3 out of the 8 of one of the Republican parties didn't believe in evolutionary theory. And no one can say whether they actually do believe in it or not, but this is kind of the song, this is how they preach to the choir, this is how they appeal to the base. So it's kind of to the extent that if you're not basically in a Republican camp, you're either a socialist, you're a radical, and you don't believe in Bible and a God, and this even equates to evolutionary scientists. And it's basically them just using the Bible to play to those kind of grassroots that believe that same-sex marriage is wrong, that Medicare insurance is wrong, that we need our liberties back. And even to the extent that we come from primates isn't a plausible theory, just read the Bible is basically their message. So in that respect, it's a very interesting time at the moment in American politics because of the polarization.
I even find it bizarre, but on a side note, is Mitt Romney, when he was campaigning against McCain, was seen as sort of the real conservative right-wing kind of guy. And now in this particular round of nominations, he's like the lefty guy, and he's desperately trying to claw back to the right. It's bizarre, the polarization.
It's very bizarre. I mean, and in terms of the practice of modern-day politics, I mean, the majority of modern-day politics is basically just PR work, obviously, and kind of strategy development and consultancies in terms of how you're going to play to the people. And you see this with all politicians. They obviously have to kind of capture the middle ground. So if you look at someone in the UK like David Cameron, like when he first rose to prominence, the accusation of behind him was that he was just basically another elite person, educated at Eton, and then he's from a privileged background and he's very posh etc. And now that's all being downplayed, and he's basically a kind of an adaptable person. He's behind green policies, he's behind forms of social distribution, he's not in it to maintain the wealthy in society. So it's basically the way the campaigns want to portray the message. And with the Mitt Romney one, that's a perfect example. So before he was like the ultra-right Mormon, and now because he's advocating forms of free medical care, those in the Republican Party are like, oh, in the end, he's a socialist just like the other guys. So it's very hard to see where you stand at any point in time in the politics game, especially in America. And it's really just a majority of it is their management team and what kind of message they're trying to put across. And it's pretty hard to be a politician in any kind of stand, especially when you're running for re-election. So it's interesting times.
Well, our time is running low. Thank you for your time and your illumination. Are there any final words you'd like to impart to our listeners?
If people have found what the topics we've covered today in terms of conspiracy theories, philosophy, and social science interesting, it's probably worth checking out www.tonysobrado.com. And are we having an interview with Dr. David Cody on philosophy and conspiracy theories and rationality and what it means to be rational within a discourse of conspiracy theory? And also, because we've got the Bilderberg annual meeting coming up in spring, I'll be speaking to Dr. Ian Richardson more about the Bilderberg group and their elite consensus and what is it, the decisions that they're trying to come up with, how is it that these decisions are made, and what are the consequences in terms of global development and globalization in the world without having to use a conspiracy theory as a form of explanation. So if they're interested in conspiracy theory from the social science, it's probably worth checking out that website, and also the Huffington Post. There'll be articles on Ian Richardson and myself and the Bilderberg coming up. And also I'm going to do some podcasts, and that'll be on the YouTube channel, which is Sobrado Social Science. So that's one way to find out more in terms of conspiracy theory and social science.
We'll have all those links on our website, so don't have to feel like you have to rush and write them down, folks. Thank you again for your time, Tony. It's been very pleasant having you here.
Oh, no, great to be here, Don, and wish you the best of all the podcasts. I'll be tuning in to see what other kind of skeptical issues you basically investigate and have on a podcast. So thanks for having me on, and speak to you soon.
Okay, we're going to take a bit of a break.